Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Publisher Lab. My name is Terrence Timmons. I'm here today joined with Piper Lafrano. Thanks for rocking on the show.
And this is Archie.
We got a furry friend here in the office.
First time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have our beloved Manny helping out on the camera.
Hey, everybody. I'm just the voice from the great beyond today.
Awesome. Well, we got an interesting docket here for everybody today. First, we're going to break it up with some social news, and then we'll move on into some AI news. And let's go to go, I guess.
Yeah, let me kick it off. So we got this first article coming in from TechCrunch.com. And a study from Kuo Studio observed digital habits among children globally and revealed that kids aged 4 to 18 spent an average of 112 minutes daily on TikTok, surpassing time spent on YouTube. This study, which analyzes the digital behavior of 400,000 families and schools, also found that nearly 20% of these children accessed AI technologies like OpenAI's ChatGPT. Additionally, there was a nearly 27% increase in time spent on streaming service, with YouTube Kids reaching 96 minutes of watch time per day. Social media usage remained high, with TikTok leading globally, followed by Facebook and X. And in the United States, the social app landscape is slightly different, with TikTok still at the forefront. The report anticipates a substantial annual growth of AI tools, estimated at 40% from 2023 to 2030. And it also highlights the lower AI tool usage among younger kids aged 10 to 13 at just 6%, which is very important and very prominent right now, because we are also seeing TikTok, who is testing out 30-minute video uploads. Because we also have another story from TechCrunch here, where TikTok is currently testing the ability for those 30-minute long videos. And this feature was initially spotted on an iOS beta version in the UK, which it marks a significant shift from TikTok's original 15-second video format. And over time, TikTok has gradually increased the lengths of their videos, with their latest extension going up to 30 minutes, which opens up the avenue for creators to explore diverse content types, including detailed cooking recipes, beauty tutorials, educational content, and potentially even full TV show episodes. Now, while TikTok is known for this shorter form content, it's going to be really interesting to see if publishers are able to diversify where they're posting their videos, to see if they can expand into the TikTok space. But I wanted to get your guys' impression to see how, what your guys' take was on seeing such a large increase on child viewing on social media platforms, and how potentially publishers can then siphon that back into their own websites.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Manny. I see this as an expected trend. And what I mean by that is, I don't know how many of you that are listening have kids or know people that have kids. I have a couple nieces and nephews, and some of my siblings' favorite ways to get them to stop crying or to like listen to them is just to either give them an iPad or turn on YouTube on the TV. So it's used as a way to, you know, entertain their kids so they don't have to. So I see this as a common trend, generally speaking. Now, if we start digging into it, we see TikTok is saying, or the data says, hey, more people are shifting that attention from TikTok instead of YouTube. So that's used as, I guess, a more popular platform. And I see YouTube, you know, kind of as a massive audience for kids. They have, you know, the regular YouTube, but also the YouTube Kids version, right? Which is like a ton of product reviews, or, you know, I guess toy reviews, and then also educational videos on there. So then bleeding that into TikTok, saying, hey, we got 30-minute uploads now. It looks like they're trying to edge their way into that category a little bit. So that's my first sense, is TikTok coming in as a competitor on that kids section.
Oh, for sure. Especially since when we were discussing this before we started recording, I would never hand a child my cell phone with TikTok open to let them watch it. But with YouTube Kids, of course, because they have content creators on there that produce content specifically for children. And now, and you have to think part of that is because they have much more time on YouTube. And so they have these full channels with all these episodes, and you can sit your kid down with the iPad and they can play these long episodes and the parents get some time and peace and quiet. But with TikTok now allowing 30-minute uploads, those content creators could go over to TikTok as well. And then, you know, as a parent, you could then follow that content creator and then hand that to your kid, and they're getting the same content but now on a different platform. So I think that's definitely something that YouTube is probably concerned about. I know I would be if I were them.
Yeah. How would you think if, I want to say a question, which is, let's say I am a publisher and I see this data and trend happening, what would be some way to think about, you know, tons of kids on the short form content? How should they think about their content strategy moving forward?
I think, are you talking about publishers that are targeting kids?
Yeah, like maybe you have a website that's like
an educational website or
mathforfun.com or, you know.
Yeah, I do think that's interesting because nowadays kids are engaging with short form content a lot more than we ever did. And I would assume that a lot of the publishers who are creating this content grew up the same way we did, where we didn't have short form content. And so it's probably a new thing for them. But based on this data and just the way that kids now engage with these platforms, I think it is probably a good strategy to do some of that short form content. I know YouTube does the shorts now, I believe.
Very addictive.
Yeah. TikTok, same thing, all short form. Or not all. I mean, obviously they're mixing some in, but the vast majority of it is. So I would probably try and mix up the content a little bit to capture that audience, especially since that's how they're used to engaging with content.
And I guess that applies also to text content because TikTok and YouTube is all video format, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe this also applies to text. And I guess if we feed this into what we've seen recently with like Google helpful update, a lot of content is like, hey, let's not have a ton of SEO fluff on your content. Let's just try to keep it short and concise and exactly what the reader wants, which is what I do when I go to YouTube and I see a short. I don't want to see any fluff. I just want to see a quick point, boom, fact.
Yeah. So. And also, you know, if you Google how to do something and it pops up with a video, it'll now just spit you into the video at that exact moment so you can get that content and you don't have to watch the video from start to finish.
Yeah.
Have you had that happen?
It jumps exactly to where you need to go.
Where you need it. So that's helpful content, right? Like we're just getting that. We're not getting the whole intro and everything. And I've also seen that on some news articles now. They'll have the highlights of the article at the top and then you can read the rest of the article below it, but you get the main takeaways right away, which I like. So I'm actually a fan of the helpful content stuff.
I would agree. One interesting point I wanted to take on this is just thinking, I guess, more generally and on the macro side, which is, you know, attention spans, right? If at a young age you're already exposed to YouTube Shorts and TikTok, then you're going to be accustomed to having, you know, short, quick content right away. So I'm guessing this should be harder than for kids in classes to pay attention for longer, you know, so when they go into high school and college, it's going to be harder maybe to sit an exam for 5 hours, for like 3 hours, or maybe, you know, focused on one task for an hour at a time. So I could see this playing a big impact on the way we do work, which we'll touch on a little bit later.
Yeah.
But, you know, just in general, I see attention spans going to be a problem moving forward.
Yeah, for sure.
And moving on to the next story, and although we're starting to see these large increase in numbers of kids using social media and how much time they're using it for, we're getting a story from CNN.com that's saying that kids aren't safe on social media, according to lawmakers. And tech industry leaders like Mark Zuckerberg and CEOs of TikTok, Snap, Discord, and X are facing a congressional grilling over the safety of teens on social media. The focus of these hearings is on the potential harms of social media and how it can be inflicted on young users, particularly related to mental health issues like depression and suicide. While tech platforms have previously emphasized helping teens and families make informed decisions, Congress is pushing for more proactive safety measures. These CEOs are expected to showcase their existing tools and policies designed to protect children and empower parents. Some platforms are distancing themselves from content recommended by algorithms and are introducing parental oversight tools screen time limits, and content adjustments. Meta is proposing federal legislation to mandate app stores to verify users' ages. However, online safety experts and state lawmakers are calling for more substantial safety measures and regulation. The industry faces increased pressure due to lawsuits and litigations exposing the inner workings of these platforms. And we've even gone as far as to see the Florida House passing a bill that would ban children under 16 from social media. Now, this story comes out of Axios because Florida's House of Representatives took that bold step that could lead to one of the strictest social media restrictions in the United States. The legislation aims to ban children under 16 from using social media platforms, and the bill focuses on the addictive nature of social media and its potential negative impact on mental health of young users. If approved by the Senate and signed by Governor Ron DeSantis, this bill would require platforms to enforce the age limit by prohibiting minors under 16 from joining and mandating the deletion of existing accounts of young users using reasonable age verification methods. The legislation targets platforms that track user activity, offering targeted content based on this information, as well as those with addictive design features, content uploads, user interactions, and tracking capabilities. However, the bill excludes certain types of platforms and faces challenges in implementing effective age verification. So we're starting to see a lot of legislation coming against these social media platforms just to try to protect these kids. It's something that's very concerning, especially for publishers, especially for websites that are focusing on kids and, you know, creating content for kids. Because if they have a strong social media presence, that a large chunk of their audience is going to be removed. And even if it's someone who's been following them for years, if they fall under that age requirement, they're off of the social media completely.
Yeah. So on this one, I think what's interesting is no one really knows who should be responsible. So should this be legislation? Should it be on the social media companies? Should it be the app store?
Or the parents?
And I think that's a really hard question, especially the age verification. There's no easy way to do it. And there's lots of ways to get around it. But we know that social media, you know, they've done plenty of studies and it can cause depression, suicide, it's addictive, can impact your social interactions with people. And then there's the whole other sort of like grooming side of it that we don't need to get into. But I definitely think there needs to be some protections in place. Who's responsible? I think that's a conversation for another time. But my big thing on this is I think a lot of it comes down to the algorithms. Like if you had a social media profile that you just followed your friends from high school, mm-hmm. Like MySpace when I was a kid, there was no...
Or like Instagram nowadays.
But Instagram even is, you know, you scroll through and you're shown other content.
You're MySpace, not really showing your friends that often.
You had your friends and that was it. And I understand times have changed and that things did happen during those days as well. That wasn't great. People can create fake profiles, start following you, all that kind of stuff. But I do think a lot of it is like the content that's recommended and then sort of the black holes that people get sucked into that can be dangerous.
So I guess when it comes to social media, the harm is more so in the algorithm that's generating the content rather than a user saying, hey, I want content about X.
So yes and no.
Okay.
What do you mean? So what I mean is, like, I think you searching for something can be productive. Obviously, we don't know what kids are searching for, so they could be searching for the wrong things.
Yeah.
But you can also do that on the internet, right? You can Google anything. Mm-hmm. But where I think negative things tend to happen is the algorithm is showing them things that maybe are inappropriate or they shouldn't be shown or things that, you know, for example, like body image is a big thing for girls.
Yeah.
And if they keep showing all these skinny girls and this is how you're supposed to look and like getting really into that, that just kind of reinforces it to them and makes it something that they think about all the time. And I actually believe in healthy algorithm training. I've done that for myself. So searching for things that are productive, things I want to learn about, financial success, investing, buying properties. I search for that. I engage with that content. And now that's the content I get rather than what Kim Kardashian did last weekend, you know?
Let me ask you a question, Piper. Does this mean you're consciously aware of your engagement time with each post? So you kind of, you know, tweak what the algorithm thinks you want and then you get more of that content?
Yeah, and what I search for, what links I click on, things like that. And I think that could also be applied for kids. Like I think parents could not control, but help direct the algorithm in a direction that's productive, educational, healthy, that sort of thing.
So then thinking about this, maybe the problem isn't necessarily the platform. It's more so the algorithm and how it works, right? If you have an algorithm that's just blindly using engagement as its optimized metric, then if you're going to spend, you know, more time looking at an image that infuriates you or makes you feel bad, they just see that as engagement, whether it's good or bad.
Yes.
So maybe a solution is, depending on your age range, you get a certain algorithm on the back end, or maybe the parent has access to edit that algorithm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if I had a kid, I would prefer if I could, you know, give them an algorithm that would, you know, promote more productive content, content that helps with learning, content that, you know, gives them an open view of the world and different things they can look at, all from a learning point of view, but not from, you know, things that are like not helpful to what they need to know at that age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously there's other dangerous aspects of social media with, you know, you can engage with pretty much anyone and you don't know who's on the other side of that. That's totally separate and not something that we need to get into. But I think the interesting thing here with Florida passing this bill, it's a pretty significant thing to tell every child under the age of 16 in Florida that they can't have social media.
Massive.
You know, for publishers, like Manny was saying, if that's how you drive some of your engagement and traffic back to your website, you know, that could impact you. And I think that just goes back to diversifying. I think the interesting thing here is YouTube considered social media?
I don't know.
I don't think it is. But that is something interesting to think about. So if they can't be on TikTok, maybe they'll spend more time on YouTube. So maybe... Yeah. You know, having your content on YouTube and TikTok and all the other social media platforms and your website is the best way to go.
Yeah. For reference, the first article we looked at, it said YouTube was not considered social media by that classification, but TikTok was. So I guess this is also a question for the audience. Do you think YouTube is a social platform or do you think it is a video site, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. In my opinion, I think YouTube is not a social platform in the sense that I see YouTube as a video content library. Mm-hmm. And the way that information is presented from the library is generated via an algorithm. But at the end of the day, it's just a content library, similar to how Google search works, but instead for video format. Now,
what's TikTok?
TikTok, on the other hand, I think is similar to that, but it has more of a social network aspect. Hmm. And the way I mean by this is on TikTok, I'm pretty sure you can message people on it. I don't own a TikTok, but you can, right? Mm-hmm. On YouTube, you can't DM people. Mm. So you can comment on videos or shorts. Mm-hmm. And if you see your friend on a comment on YouTube, well, that's like a needle in a haystack. So congratulations. But on TikTok, you can just, you know, send a message to your friend saying, hey, check out this TikTok.
Yeah.
Right. And then you can also, you know, I guess follow people and like in the same way YouTube is. So it has that little extra feature, which I think makes it bleed into social network. However, it is a bit of a gray area. But for my classification, I would say TikTok is like 70% a video platform, 30% a social platform.
Yeah. I think the fact that you and I, who, you know, we're younger, we've engaged with social media most of our lives. If we're having a hard time defining this, I don't know how Congress is going to do defining it. So I do think things need to be put in place, but I think they're going to have a really hard time figuring out definitions of things, who's responsible, what that means, and how it's enforced.
Yeah, and Congress doesn't have the best track record of understanding technology.
Yeah.
There has been some debacles the last time some of these tech CEOs have been grilled by Congress. If you want to check those out, definitely recommend it. So when it comes to like the responsibility, it's like, I think it should go into the parents. I think tech companies shouldn't be, you know, they should do their job to make the tools there. You know, Congress and government should come in when it's necessary and when it has, you know, a more like meaningful impact.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a problem of identifying it. So that's why I think the responsibility should go to the parents. And then just coming back, I guess, to the publisher side of things, I think having your government saying, hey, you can't use a certain thing is scary.
Because
we're already used to a world where Google algorithm updates, you know, happen like crazy and they fluctuate.
Right.
But now you have another element of maybe government can just turn or off.
Right.
On or off traffic streams, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it even makes this, I guess, world a little bit more tricky to navigate if a president like this does get set.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, the good thing for publishers who have their websites is I don't think that's going away. And let's say, for example, this bill passes and now kids who are under 16 years old can't be on social media. I know that if I didn't have social media, I would spend more time on Google, on YouTube, on other platforms, searching for information rather than mindlessly scrolling or searching for information on social media. So maybe it is a good thing for publishers who get traffic from Google or YouTube.
Yeah.
It could be a positive thing. And I think at the end of the day, quality content is still important. Updating your content, having relevant content, all the things that all our publishers know. But also having video on your website is another good thing because you can't be mindlessly scrolling on TikTok, maybe you're looking for video content on Google. And if you have it on your site, now you're getting that video traffic to your site.
100%. Some people just want to see a video instead of reading content.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And taking a slight pivot over to AI news and looking towards the future of technology overall, the labor market is undergoing a significant transformation, largely driven by advancements in technology and generative AI. This shift is moving the focus from traditional job-focused mindsets to a more granular and adaptable skill-focused approach. In this evolving landscape, understanding the existing skills within an organization becomes crucial. Companies are advised to create comprehensive skills catalogs to make informed decisions, identifying skill gaps, and prepare for future workforce needs. Emphasizing reskilling and upskilling rather than traditional hiring and firing practices is a key to adapting to these changes. Several companies are leading by example, offering their employees training in digital skills. This skills-based approach benefits organizations in numerous ways, including improved efficiency, adaptability, fostering innovation, and enabling more diverse hiring practices. Job roles are increasingly seen as fluid collections of competencies supported by adaptable skills, signaling a paradigm shift in how we view and prepare for future of work. And the reason we included this story in today is because it's really showcasing how a lot of people are going to be needing to work with AI in the future. And with AI being such a prominent technology and seeing how in the previous stories we're starting to see technologies like social media being taken away from children, could this be something that we could potentially be hindering the future of employees, you know, in the United States particularly, where a lot of these social media platforms are now integrating generative AI in some way, shape, or form. So that could potentially be the very first introduction into these new technologies for kids. So if they don't have access to that, we're potentially hindering the future here. Additionally, if we're looking how these job skills and how the focus on who should be getting employment because of the skills and their adaptability and how they could focus on a variety of things, that's a very clear indicator that publishers should be looking at their own business in the same way. And I wanted to get your guys' take on the concept of, you know, employers kind of looking at the ability to adapt and how publishers should be looking at that same idea.
Yeah, I would say this is interesting because I've been at eZoic for a really long time. I was the 10th employee. So back then, you know, we didn't have a full business development department and marketing department and support team and account managers. Everyone had to do lots of different things. And so even though you might be hired for one role, you found other areas where you could help out. And so it was kind of similar to this, where if you had a skill or a passion about something that was outside of the role that you were hired for, you would help out with that. And we still kind of encourage that here. So I like this concept because I think that people have lots of different skills and it doesn't all fit nicely into one little box or role or job description. And I do think with the advancement of AI and how quickly it's changing the workplace, I do think it's really important for people to focus on those skills and improving those skills so that they can stay relevant. So I thought this was a really interesting article. I think how you actually identify skills and apply it is a whole different story in a corporation. But it was a really interesting concept to think about.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of job skills over the job role.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever read the works of Cal Newport.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about this concept called career capital,
mm-hmm.
which is basically a collection of skills that over time you develop and, you know, master.
Mm-hmm.
And enough of those skills create a unique combination of a skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And the unique combination of your skill set is what's called career capital. And that is then what is then in turn seen as valuable in the workplace or mm-hmm. by a future employer because they see those skills as, hey, this person's awesome, right?
Mm-hmm.
So coming back to how AI comes into this and then how publishing can take advantage of this is, right, generative AI like ChatGPT is a tool, right? It's a phenomenal tool, right?
Mm-hmm.
It does so much for you. You know, it can generate images, videos, text. It can organize. It can do a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how I see this is, right, we're going to move away from a world where you have many people at an organization that do, person A does, you know, thing A.
Mm-hmm.
Person B does thing B. Instead, it's going to be person A has a skill set to get a lot done.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll just kind of plug and play whatever needs to get done because they have a good skill set and tools to get it done, mm-hmm. right? An example of this is coming from my own personal life. Like on the side, me and my brother have launched a website and we basically just look at what needs to be done and then go find a tool that helps us do it,
mm-hmm.
whether it be, you know, generative AI to write content or whether it be a service to automate publishing or whether it be a service to automate the monetization of our website, right?
Mm-hmm.
We just go and find a service and we're making sure our skill set is good enough that we can just, you know, tackle manage each those. Point and manage those.
Mm-hmm.
So it really comes down to, I guess, being a resourceful person is mm-hmm. now a super valuable skill in this economy we see here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for publishers, you know, I think the days of having a dedicated developer and I shouldn't generalize, but obviously some publishers will need that, but having a dedicated developer, you might not need that anymore because ChatGPT is really good at coding. Yeah. And if you have the skill to use ChatGPT and do some testing on your own, you might be able to do it. Or maybe you just need to get help every once in a while and you don't need a full-time developer on your team. Same with writing, like instead of having a team of outsourced writers or freelancers, you can now use those AI tools to generate outlines and make the process much more productive and efficient. So that's where I think publishers can take sort of this idea of like focusing on the skills rather than the job itself to make their teams much more productive.
Efficient. So it's almost like using some sort of generative AI tools and other tools like 10x your productivity with the same number of people.
Right. Yeah.
So you're getting way more out of, I guess, way little time now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I see it too. So in the, you know, if I was running a business, I would think I could run a massive site with like 3 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have one person that, you know, each per person is all basically similar,
mm-hmm.
but they just kind of plug and play the different things.
Yeah.
And they have all tools that can help them do that.
Yeah. And I think the thing with AI that I've seen in lots of different workplace settings is right now where it's at, it's getting rid of a lot of the sort of like menial operational tasks that, you know, it's kind of that like mindless work that we've all had to do in our job where we're like, wow, this is repetitive. Why do I have to do this every day or every week? All that's going away. So now we can focus our brain power on more important tasks.
The creative strategy.
Yeah, exactly.
So like taking data trends you see with, hey, more and more younger people have shorter attention spans. Hey, 20% of kids use ChatGPT. So they're going to come to the workforce. And then you're like, wait a minute. This means in the future, we're going to have short attention spans. So I should basically have a long form content strategy or short form content strategy for when this generation starts to grow up. And, you know, you can now take the energy, look at those trends, implement that cheaply into your site or business. And then now you get the reward without having to hire or outsource a whole team. You can just do it yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. To me, that sounds like an incredible world to live in. But it does put responsibility on the individual to take advantage of what's given to them rather than just letting, I guess, the world go by. It's like, hey, see what's there, grab hold of it and, you know, hold on tight and, you know, really grab on to what you're given and pursue and succeed in life with those tools.
Well, stay relevant, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think AI is moving so quickly and, you know, the first article said something like only 20% of kids age 10 to 13 had used ChatGPT, or sorry, 6% of kids age 10 to 13 reported being active AI tool users. I mean, I still think that's kind of young and AI is relatively new. But
would you let your kid use ChatGPT or YouTube first?
I'd let them use both. Yeah. But I guess older kids. So 10 to 13,
yeah, 10 only to 13
6%, but then probably 13 to 18 was 20%.
Yeah, that's like the high school range.
Right. So, I mean, I think we were pretty lucky that we work at a very, cutting edge place and we take this technology seriously. And it was kind of like thrown at us, like everyone go use it. But, you know, my parents still don't use it. A lot of my friends don't use it. I think it's taking a little bit of time for it to catch on for, you know, in the day-to-day life of people. I doubt schools are teaching kids how to use it right now. But I would guess in the next couple of years, we'll see them using it more and more. And then hopefully the kids learn those skills because I think being able to interact and use generative AI is going to... Honestly, I think it's going to be a requirement in the future to get a job.
Yeah.
I'm seeing more and more like job listings on like my email newsletters that are like looking for someone who knows how to create AI prompts. And that's something that I immediately think like, oh, if a college student knows how to do that very well, that's something that they can have an avenue in right as soon as they get out of school.
Oh, yeah. Like prompt engineering. Yeah. So I actually think that ChatGPT is going to become more and more popular. I think it's going to grow exponentially every single month, every single year. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of years, all high school kids are using it for research and things like that.
Yeah. How I see it is, you know, we work in a tech company, right? And we're in the tech industry, so we're in the know, right? So when we see the change happen, we adapt fast and really quickly. Mm-hmm. But to your point, you know, you might still have friends or family that have no idea what ChatGPT is or no idea how to use generative AI. So the behavior, you know, change will be like 5 years lagged from, you know, when it first comes out. And now how I see it happening in the future is pretty simple, right? It's not just going to be a chat interface. It's not just going to be, you know, some chat bot. It's going to be talking to your phone or, you know, maybe go super advanced. It's like, you know, how you feel, whatever, right? It's going to be just multiple ways to interact with it to get things done. Mm-hmm. So if I'm walking on the street and I'm like, where do I want to eat, right? I just say it, you know, on my phone and it's connected to all my past data. Mm-hmm. It'll pop up restaurants nearby based off all my preferences.
Yeah.
With reviews that I think are relevant. And boom, in like 2 seconds, they make that decision for me, right?
I actually thought about this the other day. Sorry if this is too much of a tangent, but... I was on a long drive and I was by myself, so I didn't want to be on my phone, you know, on the CarPlay. but I needed to get some food. And all I wanted was a Starbucks that was right off the freeway that wouldn't take me more than like, you know, 5 minutes off of my current route. And it would have been so nice just to say into Google Maps, find me a Starbucks that's right off the freeway in the next 50 miles.
Yeah.
But instead I have to, you know, click buttons. I try not to be on my phone, like Starbucks when I'm searching, click through them. Like it would have been so nice to say that. And that's how I think you're kind of talking about it as well.
Yeah. It's like you can be specific and it'll answer that specific question right away rather than this clunky method we deal with where, well, I can't really be that specific in Google search because Google is optimized for these type of results.
Right. Yeah.
You know, or ChatGPT maybe is giving me a list of bullet points, but it's not that helpful. So I think the helpfulness and how all these tools work together is going to be improved upon exponentially in the coming years. And that is when the storm is going to take everyone.
Yeah.
And just going on a bit of a tangent, Piper, since you mentioned like the concept of just talking to your Google app to try to get you to just find the closest Starbucks. They released, I believe, last fall, a pin that is an AI pin. So like, let's say you're at the grocery store and you're like, how do I pick out the best watermelon or something? And then you can automatically, you know, and it'll talk to you and it'll have a camera on it. So it'll point it. And then over CES, they announced this thing called the R2.
Which the Rabbit 2?
The Rabbit 2.
Or Rabbit 1, I think.
One of those things. It's like it looks kind of like a Pokedex from Pokemon.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's supposed to connect and interact with all of your phone apps. So if you wanted to get as specific as you did about like a Starbucks right off the road, 5 minutes, it'll do that all onto your phone. So you won't have to connect with anything. And say you're like, I'm really in the mood for listening to, you know, whatever artist on Spotify, but I only want the sad songs. It'll like give you just like the list of that.
That's crazy.
So, so, you know, that idea is not very far off.
That'll be nice.
And kids are going to need to know how to use that.
Safer driving.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess see it like, you know, I guess moving on to another tangent is like, let's say you have your running app, right? And has all your running data on, you know, your past year, right? Then I could basically say this, hey, give me a running route that accomplishes these goals. And boom, then and there.
Elevation gain, that kind of
stuff. Yeah, elevation gain, distance, maybe, you know, one that has heart rate or whatever, you know, based off your past runs. And then boom, you don't have to think about it. Or, hey, give me a workout plan that has me accomplish goal A, B, and C.
Yeah.
Boom.
That would be very cool.
Yeah. So I definitely see that's where things are headed in terms of that.
We got a little off topic. We got a little off, yeah.
Well, we love new AI tech here at the Publisher Lab, but I just want to say thanks again to both of you for being on the show this week. You guys can find all the links in the description down below if you're watching on YouTube or on Humix. Also, thank you, Archie, for being on the show. That's the CDO of the company. Any last words before we send everyone off from the Publisher Lab?
No.
Stay curious.
That's great. That's a great send-off. Stay curious and stay adaptable.
See you guys.